Pieces come and go, and I'm forever grateful. Come and tell me long and slow exactly what I wait for. Better times, yeah, better times. Somehow I don't believe it. I built a house up long ago just to up and leave it.
Welcome to On the Wing Podcast, fueled by Purina Pro Plan. Today's conversation is focused on late season bird hunting tips. And like Yogi Berra once said, it gets late early out here. You remember that quote, Carp?
No, but it sounds like Yogi Berra.
It gets late early out here. And the reason I say that is, you know, I'm sure there's folks in the quail world hearing us introduce a podcast saying late season bird hunting tips, and there's some states that are like, we just opened up. You guys are idiots. Well, I recognize that there are quail hunting seasons that are just getting underway. There's also some states in the pheasant range that are counting the days of their season on two hands. You know, they can't even go their fingers and toes. And so the premise of this is hopefully you can use some nuggets out of today's conversation. Maybe today, maybe you're driving to a spot, maybe tomorrow, maybe forever. Late season comes around every year, whether that's in the next week or maybe 2 months down the road. There's always a late season, so hopefully you give us a little grace, and we recognize that it's not late season everywhere, but hopefully it'll be a fun conversation. I'm confident that it will be a fun conversation because we have the national treasure and the regional gem back in force for the this episode of On the Wing Podcast. And if you're late to the party, the national treasure, at least coined by one person, Tom Carp Carpenter.
But not coined by me.
Not coined by you. But somebody,
we've adopted
a singular
it.
Person coined you the national treasure, and we have adopted it.
Yep.
And on the flip side, Sparks did coin himself the regional champ.
No.
That was me.
Oh, was that you? Was okay, yeah. Okay.
You can't give yourself a nickname.
I couldn't give him
the first rule of nicknames.
Yeah, I couldn't give him national billing, so regional champ.
I prefer yokel, or what was local it? Local yokel, though, yeah.
So for folks that don't know, Tom Carp is how we refer to him in the office. Sometimes more and more often national treasure, but Tom Carp Carpenter is the editor of the Pheasants Forever Journal, and Ryan Sparks. Sparky? I'm not going to call you Sparky.
My dad had a dog named Sparky for a while. She's a good bird dog.
We had a Sparky growing up, too.
Well, I just think of Clark W. Griswold being called Sparky, and Sparky. I was like, I'm not going to call you Sparky.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
But Ryan Sparks is the editor of the Quail Forever Journal, and we are going to go back and forth on late season bird hunting tips for pheasants and bobwhite quail. So as we get ready to get going, I want to recognize Purina Pro Plan as the presenting sponsor of On the Wing Podcast and the national dog food sponsor of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. All three of my bird dog pups, Esky, Gitchy, and Winter, all eat Purina Pro Plan. And it's not just because Purina supports wildlife habitat conservation. And while that's incredibly important to me, Purina Pro Plan is a team of the world's best scientists and nutritionists behind their food. They make terrific dog food for the hardworking bird dog like yours and like mine. Learn more at ProPlanSport.com. Purina Pro Plan, nutrition that performs. All right, so here's the plan for this conversation. It's not Battleship. It's not Connect Four. We're gonna go back and forth in old school debate format, sort of, because as we were proofing the winter edition of the Pheasants Forever Journal, I was proofing it late one night, and Carp had an article called PhD Roosters, Every late season rooster holds an advanced degree in hunter evasion. Here's how to outsmart the professor. So I was reading that article and I'm like, Carp, you did it again. This would make a great podcast. And I went over to Sparky.
So you were going to do that.
I wasn't going to do it. Here we go. I said, Sparks, what do you think about writing a quail version of a late season essay, article, blog? He's like, hell yeah, I'll write that. We'll get it on the website. So you can look for In the Thick of It, Think Habitat and Strategy for Late Season Bobwhite Quail. So both articles are available for you. They're both online.
Yep.
They both have 6 tips. So we set it up that way to have a little fun back and forth comparing and contrasting rooster pheasants and bobwhite quail. So anything before we dive in that preamble that you either you guys think you want to course correct me or set the stage?
For some reason, I feel like I guess I'm just used to the Battleship podcast. I feel like there's this element of competition in the room.
There's competition.
I guess I was going to say I feel exactly the opposite. Ryan's a serious pheasant hunter, and I'm a serious quail hunter. Once it gets to late season, that's when I venture out and get out after some quail. And so I'm looking forward to Ryan's tips. And I guess I don't see it as a competition. I just see it as we're teaming up and maybe inspire some quail guys to come up and take a chance on late season pheasants, and also help guys like me who are traveling from Minnesota down to Missouri or Nebraska, Kansas, to hunt quail. That's
or both.
Southern Iowa.
Mixed bag hunt.
Yeah, you can do a mixed bag too.
Just so you know, I am keeping score.
Okay.
How do you keep score?
I'm just teasing. It does feel like, we've most recently, I think all three of us did Battleship.
This is the environment you've created.
I know. And you liked it, right? You liked it so much that it's going to be a component of the Quail Stage at National Pheasant Fest at Quail Classic. We're going to do Battleship on stage. Yeah. So you're right. I do have that element of competition in my mind, and that there probably shouldn't be, but we're going to have fun with it.
Yep.
All right. Carp, you're going to kick us off because your article was the catalyst. So number one, and I'll remind listeners, this is in your Pheasants Forever Winter Journal.
Yep.
So you can follow along, read as we talk. If you're not yet a member, how about you join? Pheasantsforever.org/join. Get involved. It's a marvelous issue, and the cover is just stunning. It just showed up at the office today.
Yeah, we're just looking at it, and the color just came out perfect. And
for the cover image,
yeah. And if you look at it as a late season pheasant hunter, you're gonna think, oh my god, I've seen that many times hunting late season pheasants. And I'm not gonna say anymore. You've got it in your hand. And if you want to join and get the issue, well, just doing a little aside, email me, tcarpenter@pheasantsforever.org, and say, heard the podcast, aren't a member, I need the winter issue. I'll get one sent out to you.
And since we're taking this time to talk about membership, be remiss if we didn't talk about the winter issue of the Quail Forever Journal, because that's got another thing we were talking about is arguably the best cover in the history of our publications.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that a lot. Carp, we were talking about that earlier.
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, same thing. If you it's too late by the time you're hearing this to get it by becoming a new member. But if you want to email me at rsparks@quailforever.org, I'll make the same offer Carp did, and we'll get you one in the mail. That cover is amazing. The artist actually sourced the pigments that she made the watercolor paints from the six areas of quail country and use them to paint the six species of quail.
How cool is that?
I know.
The only thing that'd be better if she like found the thorn in you know, Burns Country, like, cut some blood and then mixed that in with the pigment.
She like painted it with like a plum thicket brush or something right. like that.
It's really cool. It's stunning. You can find the image of it at quailforever.org. But like Ryan said, we have these deadlines to get the issue, each issue. And if you sign up right now as you're listening to this, naturally the first issue that would show up for both organizations is the spring. So what we're offering is if you listen to this podcast, drop tcarpenter@pheasantsforever.org or rsparks@quailforever.org, kind of a side email and say, hey, I heard you guys talking about it on the podcast. We'll take care of you. We'll get you an extra issue. We'll get the winter issue of either one. We just need you to join, become members. All right. The article that kicked it off, PhD Roosters, number one on the list, Tom Carpenter, is sneak in. What's your tip mean, sneak in?
Well, here we get into the meat. It is, you know, by late season, and, you know, this tip applies really any time of year, but it's especially so late season pheasants, is they know the jig. They know the plan. They know what's up. And it's, as pheasant hunters, we often think, oh, this is a... Some pheasant hunters can think, oh, this is a walk in the park. We're just going to walk and talk. And one of the worst things you can do is pull up to your hunting spot. Get out. The dogs are running around, whistling, yelling, getting dressed, putting your boots on, chaps. I mean, especially in late season. Mm-hmm. And this, my trick is to sneak in, is that I don't get ready anywhere near where I hunt. In fact, it usually happens in the last town or in town.
At the Casey's parking lot with
Casey's or Quick Trip,
piece of breakfast pizza.
There might be a box of Cream Dream donuts in there.
Cream Dream donuts,
the deep fried crispy ones. Oh. But I stop. I get ready. Put the chaps on. Get your hunting boots on. Get your coat ready. Get the dog. And a little side tip: I also like to stop. I have a couple ball fields in pheasant country. I'll let the dog out and let her run around a little bit. Let him get some of those yah-yahs out before. But get everything ready, and then make the last push. Pull up to your spot. All you got to do is get out, click the door shut, load your gun as you let the dog out and go. And that's you got to start at the beginning, and this is the beginning. Is get ready before you get to your hunting spot. Don't go through any of that monkey business mm-hmm. when you're out there, and just start hunting. Because all that monkey business, the longer you do it, the more the pheasants are going to hear it, and they will hear it, and they do know what's up. They've been hunted maybe 4 weeks, maybe 8 weeks, who knows how long, depending on your state. Get in there quiet and start hunting.
It sounds like you prefer to go late season hunting by yourself. And if you're going to do group hunting, you'll go early in the season as group hunting. Is that accurate, or do you feel, because I know the argument can be made, let's get as many people as possible and vacuum this spot up with as many dogs and people as possible.
The only thing inaccurate about your description is I always prefer to hunt by myself. But
I hear you.
Or maybe one person with, uh-huh. but yeah, especially late season, the fewer people you have, mm-hmm. the quicker and easier and more silently you can get in. And don't poo-poo it and say, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Do it. Mm-hmm. It will make a difference. I guarantee it.
All right. Bobwhite quail, number one. Don't go early. I like the sounds of that.
Don't go early. Yeah, it's nice. The first thing I want to say is I was laughing to myself when you're talking about stopping and letting your dog run around at the park. Those poor kids that when things thaw out in the springtime and they got to dance around the landmines that your dogs have left in the park.
It's land management. I'm providing fertilizer.
Yeah, fertilizer.
Lark bombs.
Yeah. But yeah, don't go early.
Don't go early.
So there was once my dad and I walked this strip of cover. We hunted every year, have hunted it since I was a kid. We always find a covey there. And we got out there at like 7:30, 8 o'clock, and we walked it. And it's an out, in and out. Walked the whole thing, turned around, came back. Didn't find any birds. And we're both sitting there like, we always find a covey in there. And we're sitting on the like by the tailgate, and here they come from the field. They were still out feeding. So we had hunted it, and they weren't even there. Walked back up through there. Dogs found them, shot a couple quail. So, yeah, don't go early. In the wintertime, I think when it's cold, the bobwhites will stay on the roost longer, and then they will fly out into their feed field, and they will feed for longer. I would say a good start time is like 10 o'clock. It's nice for me and you. You can sleep in a little bit. When it's cold, it lets it warm up a little bit.
You
nice
love South Dakota too, don't you?
South
10
Dakota.
O'clock start.
10 o'clock start. Yeah. I don't know. That 10 o'clock start kind of drives me crazy sometimes.
It drives you crazy for pheasant.
Yeah.
But not so much for quail.
No, late season quail. You don't need to be out there super early. I mean, let it warm up, let the birds go feed, and hunt them in their midday loafing cover. That's really late season quail for me. It's all about that midday loafing cover.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm right there with you. I think that they are two dramatically different birds when it comes to how early you need to start in the morning. Throw the third one in there, rough grouse, I think is closer to bobwhite quail than it is to roosters. Like, I don't need to be out at the crack of dawn chasing ruffs.
Yep. When they're up in the trees budding and they see a cover.
Or right in thick cover underneath a Christmas tree. Yeah. You know, they're not moving around laying scent down until, you know, the sun's up in the sky a little bit, you know, 9 o'clock. I don't know that I'd wait till 10, but for roughs, I think I'd want to be out by 9.
I like that tip. I'm a big proponent of later as well in almost all cases for the what you said, Bob, is just the birds in the cover. They've come back in. They're laying around a little scent. You know, we all, especially pheasant hunting, where there's different start times. There's 8 a.m. in Iowa, 9 a.m. Minnesota, 10 a.m. South Dakota.
Half hour before sunrise in some states.
And if I had my druthers, and especially like in pheasants, and it's not as big of a factor later in the season when there's not as much pressure, but you got to get out there and claim your spot and be there and be parked, and so everybody else drives by and rubbernecks you and sort of giving you the finger under the – it's like, well, get up earlier.
Everybody's not angry.
Right. But I think I like that tip for quail late, but I like it any time of year too.
The sinning conditions too. Like if you get a frosty morning when it's real cold – When the sun first hits that frost and that starts to like warm, and the sinning conditions are great for the dogs in that in that circumstance as well.
Tip number two, it's kind of a build on to tip number one for carp: hunt quiet.
Yeah, we've sort of got a theme going here for pheasants, and this is the second one, and it's pretty simple. Is you've done all this work with tip number one to get in quiet, to not warn them what's coming, to sort of get out there when it's a little too late for them to maybe react. Why scare them off when you're still at the vehicle? I like to hunt quiet too. It's another reason for hunting alone, because you don't have to communicate with anybody, and it's especially so with a big group where you have to maneuver and, let's swing, let's pivot, let's do this. I like to hunt quiet. I always like to say, if you're going to hunt deer, you don't walk up, laugh, slam the door, you know, yell to your partners, you go over here, I'll go over here. I like to hunt pheasants like I would hunt deer. You treat them with big, they can't smell, but they've got the eyes and the ears. And I think feel too, sense of, you know, boom, boom, people coming, dogs coming. They just know. So hunt quiet. Things like, I never do it anyway, but I like to not even have a beeper on my dog. Just don't give any other indication that you're in the field other than the sound of you walking and your dog working. By that point of the season, I even try and minimize any whistle I will do for my dog or anything like that. I like to hunt quiet, sneak, and be a sleuth.
So very similar, at least from a big game translation to bird hunting, is Carp's number two. I'm sorry, Sparks' number two, which is read the signs.
Read the signs. So, you know, a lot of times in Nebraska this time of year, there's snow on the ground. I've spent a lot of mornings, you know, if you're not going to hunt until 10 o'clock anyway, you might as well drive around with some coffee. You can spot quail tracks in plum thickets along the side of the road, see which way they're going, like how they're traveling, what food sources they're using. You know, are they coming out of a – I remember one covey last year. There was this – the farmer had unfortunately pushed this drop into a big pile. But we got a real heavy snowstorm, and it just looked like a quail highway coming out from this brush pile, all from this little, like, one opening in the brush pile, and they go out and spread out all over this cut cornfield. So, yeah, look for those tracks. A lot of times you can find the roost rings that quail leave when they roost up at night, the little ring of droppings that they leave. So there's your roost cover. They're not going to be far from that during the day. Yeah.
Give a shout-out. As I give this shout-out, I want to ask you a question about Onyx and if there's an Onyx application for late-season carp. Think about that as I read this commercial spot for Onyx. Onyx is a proud supporter of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, and they want to thank everyone listening for being a part of this organization, and they're so appreciative that they are making an offer. You can find it in our show notes. There's a link in our show notes to the Onyx Hunt website where you, the listener, can get 20% off your subscription to Onyx if you use the code PFQF. And Onyx is going to make a contribution back to Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's wildlife habitat mission. So thank you so much to Onyx. And Carp, you are a Onyx super user. You fall asleep at night with Onyx on your phone.
I do.
Right?
I do. That's
he's got an Onyx tattoo.
It's usually the last.
We won't say where.
Yeah, he showed it to me once.
But so what I'm wondering is, do you have any, and I know I'm catching you completely cold. This is not part of your tips, but is there a way that you use Onyx to find late season success?
Yes. And as soon as you said that, I knew exactly what I was going to say. And I am an Onyx fan. I would guess I don't even use the great majority of features, but I know enough of how to use what's there. You know, we all know how to use waypoints. You know, we all have our little systems for color coding. I've seen birds here. This looks good. I want to hunt this. I actually got birds here. But the feature I love, and it's really helpful in late season, but I use it for almost all upland bird hunting when I think I'm going to need it, and that's tracker. I think about, you know, Ryan's good at bringing in examples from hunting. One example I have is a late season hunt a few years ago, or actually it was probably only last year, a gray late winter day, end of the Iowa season, huge area, a lot of mixed cover from, you know, big pollinator, blue stem fields. There's sort of, the birds probably aren't in there because there was snow on the ground to the cattail slough edges. A gray day, cold, windy. You get out there, you really don't even know where you've been and what you have and haven't done. I'll turn on tracker, and then I can look and say, okay, I finished sort of working the edge of this slough. I'm going to go over the hill to that one. But maybe I hunted that one. Or was that this way? I look at my tracker and I go, and I can look, and as the hunt progresses, I can go, oh, my God, I forgot this slough. It's one hill over, and it's to the west. And I'll literally watch myself walk because you don't have sun. It's just gray. It's just, ugh. And I'll see, okay, come over there. Oh, there's that. There's a slough. I never hunted that. I might, if I hadn't done that, I might have been hunting an edge I already hunted. And I'll turn on tracker and just see where I've been. I'll also give you, and I'll probably do a story on this next year about using tracker. I'll also use it sharptail hunting. You know, we're going way early season, but as a 30-second aside, I'll turn it on. I used it last year, big area, North Dakota, just sort of rando walking, following the dog around this area, hunted for 2 hours, had a bird, thought, I can't believe that's it here. And I looked at my tracker, and I had sort of made a big circle, and there's probably 100 acres that I had circled that I never even touched. Mm-hmm. And whoop, I go through, there's a covey there. I would have thought I'd covered the place if I hadn't turned on tracker. So late season, I'll use it to track myself and see where I've been and where I haven't, especially when you're in those nice, big, pheasanty spots where there's it all starts to look the same after a while, and especially on a gray day. When after a while, literally, I anyway don't know if I'm heading north, south, east, or west. I just start following the dog, you know.
What about you, Sparks? Anything that comes to mind as you think about Onyx?
Oof, my favorite late season feature of Onyx is when you click a property that you can see the tax address of the person that owns it. That's my late season, almost after the season is over tip, is driving around looking at places that look quaily, looking at where that person lives and driving over their house and knocking on their door and saying, hey, can I hunt quail? And we were talking about this earlier, Carp. I mean, most of the time they say yeah. Yep. Actually, my dad called me this morning and he was like, guess what? Just stop and talk to a new guy that's farming this place. He gave me permission to hunt quail on everything he farms. He got out the map and showed me, and
wow,
I enjoy that permission season, and you could not do it without Onyx. Yeah. I mean, you'd have to be a detective to do that.
Yeah, or have a plat map for every place that you're at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I love that tracker feature is phenomenal. At the very base form, you know, thinking about rough grouse, throwing a third bird in here, it helps you get back to your truck.
Yep.
You know, not only do you see where you've covered, but, you know, if you're out, you know, in the woods and you can't see over the horizon, it helps keep you oriented.
Yeah, especially in the woods. I mean, but even on the prairie, you get up there on a gray day, you're like, I don't know where I am.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I think the car, I'm pointing one direction, and I think the car, the vehicle's that way. And I look at it on X, and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's straight behind me. But that means you're out there, and that means you're out there hunting. You're hunting. Yeah. You're working the cover. You're making those decisions. You're looking for stuff. And you're just following your dog. So,
how did we ever do this without Onyx?
I don't know.
You know, it has become an absolute game changer of a tool.
Absolutely.
And that phrase is used too often. But I think about, you know, it, as a type 1 diabetic going into the woods without, you know, like I would have a Magellan, like just figuring out, you remember those handheld GPSs trying to get back to the truck, you know, and just getting lost. You don't hear stories really about people getting lost anymore. Thank goodness Onyx was made at the very minimal, right?
Right. And it helps you get birds too.
It helps you get birds. Yep. It helps you get birds. All right. Carp, going to number three, late season PhD roosters. I'm sensing a theme here. We started with sneak in, went to hunt quiet, and now we're gonna go slow.
I'm gonna use my one line here is, when you think you're going slow enough, slow down another step. I just think, you know, we all worry about pheasants running, and but in late season, especially when you're talking about perhaps snow cover on the ground, and they're limited more in where they want to be, especially when it starts getting cold. They're heading to the thermal cover, the cattails, most commonly in much of pheasant range. But you also think about the more southern quail or pheasant range, the crossover places like what Ryan's talking about more is in Nebraska and Kansas, places like that. The woody cover, the plum thickets, cedar thickets too. So I go slow, just let the dog work. She goes slow anyway, especially when you're in cattails. They sort of slow you down. They sort of slow you down just by their very nature anyway. And I'm hoping to get those hunkering roosters that just aren't going to – that have run enough and are like, okay, I'm going to take my chances. I think it was that same day I was talking about last year. We're in a cattail edge, working along, had the wind coming across, a few tracks around. The dog, she's a pointing dog, but she thought she smelled something. She went in the cattails, and I just went in with her. And she was like maybe 15 yards ahead of me, and we're walking through, and I was just following the snow, following off the cattails, and all of a sudden I must have looked away, and no bell. And I thought, she's here somewhere. It took me 10 minutes clomping and tromping and around, and finally I found her, and she's on point just right into a cattail clump, like 5 feet in front of me. I went in, and I just start kicking, kicking, kicking. Out goes a rooster. And I say we got that rooster just because patience. We're just going slow, just going slow. We could have easily passed that rooster up. And I think pheasant hunting, if you're going fast late season, you're giving the roosters an advantage because they're going to hunker in. They're going to circle back. Backtrack too, let that, and we'll get to that too. So I just like to go slow. I go slow any time of year. Late season sort of makes you even go slower by the cover you're in and the conditions you're dealing with. Go slow.
And so I'll jump to Bobboy Quail and Sparks number three, and I think there's some corollaries here. Your number three is focus on quality habitat.
Yeah, quality habitat and overlooked habitat as well, I would say. Early season, you can find some quail in some weird spots that you're like, what are they doing here? But I think late season, they're really going to be in their core area in the thick stuff. I mean, brushy, I'm not talking about like thick CRP where there's not much room for them to get around in on the bottom. But like, you know, I'm thinking like plum thickets, sumac. There's a plant that grows in wet areas where I hunt in Nebraska called scouring rush. They like to get in that late season, and then overlooked habitat, so the places that aren't easy, that look quaily from the road and you can just walk in, maybe places that are, you know, you're talking about onyx. There's a lot of draws in that we hunt that you can't see from the road. And people driving around, you don't know they're there. Well, you can look at a satellite map on Onyx and know they're there and, you know, get permission and walk back in there and get to them. So,
I particularly think about that in a state like Kansas. That the reason being, in Kansas, there's so much weehaw, that so walk in hunter access, that is farmland. So from the road, it's often wheat stubble or corn stubble. And you drive on the road and you're like, this doesn't look like much. You pop up Onyx and you're like, oh, over the horizon there is a amazing looking ravine. And you know what? There's all this corn stubble or wheat stubble surrounding it. It's like food, cover, and it's not obvious. And, you know, you go through that stubble open access and occasionally you'll kick up a covey in that stubble, right? But you get to that ravine and it's like, oh, Valhalla.
Yeah, and good cover, like you were saying, that's adjacent to ag. And when I say adjacent, like the closer the better, I think. And then, you know, those overlooked spots. A couple days ago I was talking to there's a photographer in Nebraska, Doug Steinke, and he big waterfowl hunter, and he goes and takes photos of waterfowl and stuff. And he was saying he's been finding coveys of quail now that it's gotten colder along this reservoir where I think 2019 we had this big flood, and there's all this down timber. It's like hunting blow down timber for elk or something. He's crawling through this thing and he's finding all sorts of coveys of quail in there. So, I mean, they're really going to get in where they're protected from predators and they're protected from the elements. That can make the shooting sometimes pretty sporty. It feels like grouse or woodcock hunting when you can almost can't even shoulder your shotgun because it's so thick, but that's where they're at. So that's where you got to go.
So I mentioned as I introduced this one that there's corollary to carps, hunt slow. And what I mean by that, I was thinking about Dr. James Martin, a professor at University of Georgia, has done a lot of research around knowing where quail are through radio collars and then running dogs. I think Mark McConnell at Mississippi State's also done this, where their dogs are, you know, they're bringing in bird dogs, but they know exactly where the quail are. And it's amazing how many, even amazing bird dogs, how many they run past, how many quail they run past. So I think to bridge the connection between Carp's comment about hunting slow and your comment about focusing on quality habitat. It's like when you're quail hunting and you know when you're in the good stuff, dial it down a little. Mm-hmm. Like, don't race through that. Spend your time in the good stuff, because you and your dogs have a propensity, even though we know we're doing it with pheasants, you might not know you're doing it, but you probably are doing it with quail. You're going past them.
For sure. I remember once there was a tree limb that had come down out in some soybeans, and that's a classic spot late season, and the dogs ran right past it. And I was like, I don't know why. I'm going to walk past it. I kicked the branch. There's a whole covey of quail there. So, yeah, slow down.
All right. Number four, PhD Roosters, Tom Carpenter, attack twice. I like how you frequently in your writing have this like war sort of imagery.
The classic pheasant hunter.
Doesn't he?
Tactics and maneuvers.
Attack twice.
Well, this
blank
one,
them.
quick aside, it's funny you say that, because at some point there is going to be I'll do a story, and the word within the story, in the title will be, and regarding roosters, is combat. And it is, so it's funny you say that, but what is attack twice? To me, this ties exactly to what we both just talked about, going slow, mm-hmm. knowing the cover, and knowing good cover, you know, Ryan's strategy about food, cover, all together. Man, there's got to be birds here. If you're hunting a place, and we'll assume maybe there's some snow on the ground, but maybe not, but it's late season, you know there's got to be birds here. There just probably are. If you're in one of those spots, like a cattail slough that there is surrounding in the uplands, perhaps, what would have been good nesting cover, and you're maybe even in the cattails and you're seeing tracks, and you take one track through, it's like, you probably pass some birds. If it looks that good, go back through it. Figure it out. Go attack it twice. And to just what you said about the quail pheasants will do the same thing. They'll just skedaddle another direction and hunker in and come back. You come back through. And I'm not afraid to go through a spot if I think there's birds there two or three times. And yeah. You can even, if you can see your tracks in the snow, or you can, if you have your tracker on, you're like, man, I didn't hunt this other side. And Ryan talked about, oh, there's that little tree down, and I took a chance, and I walked over there, a covey of quail, a couple years ago. This is in South Dakota, hunting a slough, hunting on the edge, you know, in the grass cattail transition, working it. We came back through sort of another track, and there was one, I'll call it point, that went up in the field, and it was just an odd little spot. And I thought, we're just gonna hunt it because we haven't found a bird. There's gotta be birds here. We went up there, and she pointed to roosters, and I swung on one, and by golly, I got it. And it's like, it would have been super easy just to say, yeah, we worked this place, we're done. But we went through three times, and then we even went to a corner that we knew we didn't hit, and that's where they were.
I was betting that you were going to use the word tootle at some point during the description. Take another tootle through there.
Tootle's good. Go slow as tootle. I suppose I've used the word tootle enough that our listeners and readers know it now. But yeah, this is tootle twice. That's we'll change this from attack twice to tootle twice.
Sparks number four for bobwhite quail in the late season. Check your equipment. What do you mean?
I think equipment or gear, late season, it's probably the most important time of year, because one, you're just not going to hunt hard, and you're not going to focus on hunting unless you're comfortable. And I think people make a lot of mistakes when it comes to gear in winter, like wearing big bulky gloves where you're fumbling with the safety or the trigger guard and, you know, the moment of truth, and you can't, you know. Another thing people do is put on these big bulky stocking hats or something. You don't realize how much you use your ears, whether it's a rooster that's starting to get up off to your right, you know, you always hear it, and it gives you that, a lot of times that little bit of time is what it takes to get a bird. Quail are no different. You're talking about being quiet earlier. One thing I did earlier this year, I have a little metal whistle that I carry on my vest just in case, you know, sometimes I've hunted, it's been so windy the dog gets lost in some thick CRP or something. They can't find you. So I'll use this whistle. But it's driving me crazy because sometimes it would clank and hit its metal, and it would clank on the receiver of my gun. Wrapped it up with hockey tape, silent. Just little things like that for gear. You know, my dad's one who's, you know, he probably cleans his shotgun like once every 3 years. I mean, that thing, it just rides in the back of his truck, bouncing around in the dog box. And there's a lot of times late season, he's hunting with a semi-auto, and he gets one shot when the quail get up because the gun is so it'll cycle, but it's so slow that he doesn't, you know, he's got like a 3 second pause before there's another shell and they're ready to go. So, you know, make sure your stuff's dialed in. Like for gloves, as long as you're walking, I've never found like more than like just a pair of leather gloves. My hands don't get cold. I don't know. You just got to get your body temperature.
You are a Southern boy.
I guess.
Do you have any hacks for?
He's a northern boy. If his hands don't get cold, he's not hunting.
He's not hunting.
He's not cold hunting pheasants at 10 below 0.
I've hunted some pretty cold. I mean, I'm hunting in Minnesota now.
Yeah. So your hands don't get cold in Minnesota?
Leather gloves. I just wear leather gloves. Just deerskin gloves from Menards, like $20.
And your hands don't get cold?
No. And I never, like, even in the coldest weather, like, I just wear a thermal with a shirt over the top of that and my bird vest. I've never needed
what's
more.
The,
I guess I run hot.
You might. But so what's too cold for you to go? Is there a temperature where you won't go?
I mean, if it gets down to like 15 or 20 below or something like that, at that point too, it's almost, you might not be killing a bird when it gets up in the air with your shotgun, but you might kill it by pushing it around those conditions. Yeah. It's also really hard on your dog. Mm-hmm. I mean, when it just hurts to be outside, especially if it's windy. But other than that,
give me sunny 0 and 5 mile an hour wind and I'm happy as a clam. But I have to take care of my hands. They're so key. And I've frost over 53 seasons of all kinds of stuff. My hands just get cold.
Yep, me too.
I put big hand warmers in my pockets, and I'll take a stop and I'll put my hands in and warm my hands up. I wear some light wool gloves. I have about 5 pairs of them that I can just cycle through them. I go through about 2 or 3 pairs a season because they just get ripped up. I also like to, I'll take, once an old wool sock is worn off, I'll cut off the foot part and I'll put them on my wrists because all your blood's going before you. Think about what's exposed between your sleeve and your glove is your wrist. I'll keep that warm and I'll put my gloves on it. I take precise care of my hands because that's what it all comes down to. Can I get a shot? So Ryan's right, detail game. He also talked about the gun. I just took my deer hunting break and we're back on pheasants now. It's early December, and I ran my gun into the gunsmith, said clean her up because it's going to be late season. And you talked about your dad and it jammed, man. If I don't clean that gun if I don't get it clean before late season starts, I'll get one of those jams from cold and or cattail fluff and all that stuff. And I'll at least start the late season and no oil in it and just go. And then I'll take it in after the season and my guns, because I have him take the whole thing apart and he'll give me a baggie full of the crap that's in there. So, yeah, take care of your gun.
You got to Instagram the shit out of that.
I should.
So I'm with you. It must be like early years ice fishing because my fingers get cold nowadays. Like, I'd love to, you know, just run hot and not have to worry about it. That's wonderful. I get my fingers nowadays, especially in the first, let's say, 15 minutes out of the truck. My fingers are really cold.
Always start cold.
Oh,
if you start warm and all bundled up, you're always too hot within 20 minutes.
Right.
It's like you're like an engine. You got to get up to running temperature and then good to go.
And that's true of hands. Generally speaking, you get rolling and your hands will get enough circulation through there and a warm up and you'll be okay. As long as you don't take a lunch break and cool down and then try to do it again.
Yeah.
But so I just want to throw one hack on top of yours. You talked about adding wool socks around your wrists. So in hand warmers in your pockets, what I do is put hand warmers in the kind of the end of my glove, you know, where the wrist portion of the glove is tight, and it holds the hand warmer across my wrist for the very same purpose you're talking about. All the blood to your hand is going across your wrist, so if that hand warmer is on your wrist, I think I just feel like it circulates the blood.
I'll
instantly.
Do that deer hunting.
Do you?
Yeah. Okay. Well, the thermal that I have too, and a lot of them are this way. It has a little thumb hole in the sleeve, and it's the sleeve's actually built a little bit longer, so the sleeve actually comes up, and the thumb comes through that hole, and it actually kind of covers the bottom part of your hand. And those are good for holding those.
Those are good.
And warmers too.
Those are good.
Yeah.
All right. Year-end giving. In case you didn't know it, Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, we're a 501c3 nonprofit. What does that mean? It means your donations can be charitable contributions, tax write-offs. So please consider, as we approach the end of 2024, making a donation to Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever this end of year giving season. Your donation will help fund our wildlife habitat mission, public access, and introducing new folks to upland bird hunting. In the end, we all get so much out of these landscapes, these grasslands. Please consider a donation to Pheasants Forever or Quail Forever at pheasantsforever.org/donate or quailforever.org/donate. Number 5, PhD roosters for carp. Think nasty.
If I can put this in a sentence or two, it's this. If you're enjoying a nice stroll and enjoying your walk, you're not going to, that's good for you. If you want to shoot pheasants, get miserable and uncomfortable and get in the crap. Whether it's cattails, willows, plum brush, the pheasants just in late season are not in the pleasant places to hunt them.
They're in the what? They're not in the pleasant places. They're in the
hell holes.
There we go. I was hoping you were going to drop it.
That's simply enough my tip. If you're having a nice stroll and you're happy, that's great. If you want to shoot a pheasant, get some snow down your neck, get some snow in, you know, get wet a little bit, stop, get your hands are such that I gotta stop and I gotta warm them up, and my hand warmers in my pockets for a while, okay, let's go. Get in the crap. Pheasants, late season pheasants, and I really don't care if it's a mild day or not, by that time of year they are in the crap.
All right, Bob Boy Quail number 5, Ryan Sparks says, don't go late. Your number 1 tip was don't go early. Number 2 tip is don't go late. What do you got?
The Goldilocks time.
Yeah, what do you got here?
Not too late. I'm like a winter quail hunter. I'm like a 10 to 3, something like that. You go too early, the birds might not be where you're hunting. You go too late, and it's like I was saying earlier, when it's so cold, you know, when the sun's setting at 4:30 and you're bumping a covey at 4 or something like that, they need time to regroup and warm up for the night. That's how they make it through the season. So you just can't scatter them to the wind that late in the day. At least I don't like to. And so I just would encourage people to consider ending their hunt a couple hours before
sunset. They're much more vulnerable than the majority of our game birds.
Yeah. Yeah, especially during winter when there's periods of time when there's a little bit of snow, but then on top of that snow, there's like a crust of ice. Quail have a really hard time. They need open ground to get feed. It's hard life being a quail, and I think they need a break here and there, and that's one. It's just don't hunt them too early and don't hunt them too late.
Well, here's the comparing contrast, because the final tip from Carp for roosters is to stay late. Rooster's a little different bird.
Yeah, and I'll preface this with, I think I love Ryan's tip about don't hunt them too late. Quail are more vulnerable than pheasants. They need to, a pheasant on his own can make it. His or her own can make it tuckled in for the night.
Tuckled
in. And pheasants If the weather is nasty, I'll give them that sort of a break too. And what do I think is nasty for pheasants? Going to be bitter cold that night, like below zero, and or, and the or is important too. If it's precipitating, if it's snowing, if it's sleeting, if it's that winter rain, give pheasant quit. If shooting light ends at 4:30 for you, give them a break at 3:30. If it's that crappy of a day. But if it's pleasant, pheasants can take it, the pressure a little bit. And what do I mean by pleasant in winter? It's not going to get below zero. It's not precipitating on them. They've had a chance to feed during the day. There's not too much snow. Then go and stay late. But I like to get in there and hunt them the last couple of hours. Mm-hmm. Because especially if it's cold out, You never quite know what birds are going to do. I think often pheasants in the winter will have one feed a day, and they'll go out and come back in. They'll go out after the sun is up, and you'll see them. They'll be out in the fields at 10:30 in the morning, and you're not going to get them in the cover, but then they're in for the day because it's relatively harsh conditions, and I like to hunt them in the late afternoon because then they're maybe taking a little move out of the deepest part of the hell holes, and they're coming out to those lighter edges. Pheasants don't want to roost in the heart of the cattails. They always want to be on an edge where there's a little open, and that gives you that maybe that one chance of the day you have to not be in the middle of a 20 acres of cattails tromping around that you might be able to find one on the edge. So if I feel that the conditions are like, yeah, I'm not jeopardizing these birds because it's not precipitating out and stuff like that, I'll hunt them right up to the very end of light.
The other thing that I think is worthwhile to just point out is a difference between bobwhite quail and pheasants is you're primarily shooting roosters.
Yes.
Right? So when you're... Unless you're Ted Williams, and I'm thinking about the baseball player that can identify the seams of a baseball, it's hard to pick out. It's not impossible, but it's hard to pick out the male white bobwhites versus the green.
You can pick them out, but by the time you pick them out, they're gone.
Right. Trying to only shoot males is a very high-level skill that not many people have. So you're going to shoot males and females. With pheasants, you're shooting only roosters. So that's, on one level, enabling hens to have the opportunity to have the food and cover to get them through the winter in better numbers than in males. Now, the caveat to that, as you point out, is sometimes you're hunting in really tough conditions, and you do run the risk of, while you're not going to shoot hens, you're pushing them out of the best thermal cover. And what do we know about what's going to set up next season for success? Well, the very first thing that sets up next season success is how healthy are hens when they come out of winter and into spring. So if you're pushing hens around every golden hour, maybe you got a honey hole spot, 80 acres, and you hunt that son of a gun, you know, every single Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and you're pushing hens out of quality cover all winter long, that's going to weaken them. And they're going to have a harder time when it comes to nesting season. So you gotta balance some of this. Pheasants are a little bit more resilient. You're only shooting roosters, but consider the conditions.
Yeah, you're moving hens too, and I guess the caveat here is be kind. Mm-hmm. Think about what that night, what that evening is going to be like before you go pushing birds at the cusp of sunset in the winter.
Which leads us right into the final tip for Sparks, the final tip of this episode. We've already stolen a little bit of your thunder, but tip number 6 from Sparks: prioritize conservation.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that talk about, you know, the wildlife, the state limit is one limit, but they might impose a personal limit on themselves of how many birds they're going to shoot. I maybe don't go that far, but I would say don't don't limit out on one covey. Think about all the things that are going against quail in the winter. There's less leaves on the trees, so and there's snow on the ground, so those aerial predators can see these little dark dots moving around on that white background very easily. We as hunters can find their tracks and figure out where they're living. They generally hold a little bit better when it's cold because they don't want to go, you know, they want to stay warm. They want to stay coveyed up. Winter is a hard time for quail. Don't stay on the same covey and just dog them and shoot a limit out of a single covey. If you want to shoot a limit, that's fine. Mm-hmm. I'd have no problem with that. But shoot two birds out of a covey and go find another covey. And shoot two birds out of a covey and go find another covey. For me, quail hunting all year long really is more about I like to shoot birds as much as anybody else, but at the end of the season, it's how many different coveys of quail did we find together, not how many birds did I shoot out of those coveys. So just go find more coveys, explore some different areas, and, you know, give the birds a break, really. Like, just don't shoot out your coveys. They'll be there in the spring to make more.
Right on. Right on. Fellas, thanks for doing this.
It's fun.
It was very, I think, while the focus is on late season, you know, late season is a bit of a, it's a paradigm that changes in depending on where you are, geography, time of year. I think there's very valuable tips here that are useful, whether it's, you know, early season, mid-season, late season, but a little bit of focus on late season.
And I would just add in sort of conclusion is that any bird this far into the season, whether it's 4 weeks or 6 weeks or 8 weeks, and it's a brace of quail, to use that old term, or it's a rooster, that's a real trophy. Mm-hmm. And late season hunting is fun because there truly is less pressure. The fair weather hunters are gone, and it's you and seasoned birds. And, man, there's nothing like any bird that is in the late season. And I just got, as a pheasant guy, I got to tell a quail story because I love quail. And it ties sort of a lot of things we talked about. Kansas a few years ago, late January, I was on X-ing. We had it at night, and I'm like, we're hunting a big, big area. And I'm like, wow, look at this area. I could see a field, and it was sort of a horseshoe of the river. And I could see brush along the river, and I could see that it was crop. But there was a mile walk to get there through cedars and crap that, you know, would not be productive. And I thought, we're going to do that for our last day. I took the dog. We walked through that cedars. We sort of used it on X. We got up there. This is a mile and a half from any access point. You can't get at it from across the river, maybe when it was froze. And I came up over a rise, and it was a cut wheat field surrounded by grass and brush along the river. And I'm like, oh my God. And we hunted this. We hunted, and we found one covey. We shot two birds. It's just me and my dog. And and one was just a beautiful hen. And I thought, I need a cock quail. And I'm not Ted Williams, but I got one out of another covey. And I'm like, this is it. And those two quail are mounted in my house right now. And it was like late season, end of the season. Mm. We found them. And if you think Ryan and I are just quail or pheasant guys, he loves pheasants. Mm-hmm. I love quail. And I love late season hunting. It's tough, but it's fun.
There you have it. Get out there and do it, folks. Find a day. Maybe it's snowy. Maybe there's a grassland that hidden off the road with your name on it. There's birds still out there to chase. If you're not yet a member, please join Pheasants Forever, Quail Forever .org/join, and drop us a note. rsparks@quailforever.org, tcarpenter@pheasantsforever.org, or bobs@pheasantsforever or quailforever.org. Thanks for listening, folks. I'm Bob St. Pierre, reminding you to always follow the dog. Something good will rise.